This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. Even if the Federal Trade Commission and most of the state's attorneys general succeed in breaking up Facebook, other questions remain about the ongoing damage from Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, harms unaddressed by even the most modern interpretations of antitrust law. The invasion of privacy on a global scale, the manipulation of politics, the manipulation of emotions and behavior, the proliferation of toxic content. No matter how creative our legal interpretations, none of that is the stuff of antitrust law. Nor have we any reason to expect action from Facebook itself. Mark Zuckerberg has repeatedly professed concern, promised to be better, and gestured toward self-regulation. But the structural hazards within Facebook's algorithm and very business model have not been addressed, merely window dressed. Its oversight board, for example, first floated 2.5 years ago as a guarantor of independent governance, has only now this month revealed its first so-called cases for consideration.
At present, the only thing that Facebook is allowing this board to adjudicate on is takedown decisions. There's all of these other cases which just do not qualify, that Facebook says cannot be heard by the board, including the issue of what actually stays up on Facebook.
Carol Cadwalader is a journalist for The Guardian and The Observer, who became a Pulitzer finalist last year for her reporting on the Cambridge Analytica scandal. Late this year, she became a co-founder of the self-proclaimed Real Facebook Oversight Board, a shadow court organized by academics and advocates to actually address the harms I've mentioned. A few weeks back, they announced their first three cases. Number one, former Trump campaign manager and former Cambridge Analytica board vice president, Steve Bannon.
A month ago, Steve Bannon on Facebook Live called for the beheading of Dr. Fauci. He said that he wanted to see his head on a spike. You know, a lot of people, by any reasonable standard, would say that that is in breach of Facebook's own terms of conditions, and he should have been struck off the site. That didn't happen, and Mark Zuckerberg has very much resisted that.
You can argue that head on a pike is more colloquialism than threat, but there is no arguing that Facebook at its worst isn't an incitement machine. We can look at the pogrom against Muslim Rohingya in Myanmar, ginned up by the nation's military on Facebook and carried out by Buddhist nationalists, who were given free basic internet access by Facebook in its attempt to corner the internet market there. Or consider, for another example, the deadly shooting this summer in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
The key question here is, how did people like Kyle Rittenhouse know to go to Kenosha on the night of August the 25th? The loved ones of those who died in Kenosha say Facebook is partly to blame for allowing posts that were mobilizing militias and activating white supremacists.
Specifically, this event posted by the militia group Kenosha Guard, asking for patriots to take up arms and defend Kenosha from evil thugs. Some users responded with open threats of violence, one writing, "I fully plan to kill looters and rioters tonight." Concerned users reported the page, but Facebook did not take it down.
It was largely an operational mistake. The contractors and the reviewers who the initial complaints were funneled to didn't pick this up.
If Zuckerberg's mistakes were made excuse sounds familiar, that's what Nixon's spokesman said too. Still, Facebook is among the defendants in a federal lawsuit from four people who protested that night, including the surviving partner of the late Anthony Huber, Hannah Giddings.
When Carla Rittinghouse started shooting people, her partner, incredibly bravely, he was unarmed, went to try and tackle him, and he was shot dead. You know, Hannah feels that Facebook is complicit in this white supremacist violence. It's the equivalent of the meeting house where the white supremacists met up and swapped notes and announced where they'd be converging and advertised for new recruits. And, you know, to talk about the fact that her partner died as a result of an operational mistake, it's just so dehumanizing.
The plaintiffs will have to settle for a federal court of law because Facebook's Supreme Court will give them no hearing. Nor will the censored critics of authoritarian regimes have their day in Facebook court. And so theirs is the Real Oversight Board's second case.
Vietnam has threatened to shut down Facebook in the country if the social media giant refuses to bow to government pressure and censor more political content on its platform. The company complied with a government request in April to increase censorship of anti-state posts for some 60 million Vietnamese users.
Facebook, faced with £1 billion of lost revenue, complied with their wishes, and they've taken down the accounts of these journalists and dissidents. Again, it's in the terms and conditions of Facebook's oversight board that these people are not allowed to appeal to the oversight board. I think it raises a really interesting case about the relationship between authoritarian governments and Facebook and the compromises and backroom deals that are being made. I think a lot of other countries around the world are looking at what's happened in Vietnam and sort of seeing something that they might want to try in the future.
Other countries and, as it turns out, Facebook itself. When Cadwalader's Real Oversight Board was launching, the company, she says, tried to stifle their free speech by bigfooting a nonprofit donor.
Facebook discovered that this project, the Real Facebook Oversight Board, was in progress. And a PR guy from, he's in corporate communications, rang our funders at Luminate and harangued them, basically, and asked why they were funding this and suggested that they shouldn't be. And they were quite shocked by that. We were quite shocked at that because, you know, the oversight board is meant to be independent from Facebook. And yet here we had the kind of this heavying coming from Facebook trying to cut off the funding of a new, you know, journalistic enterprise. It was bizarre sort of corporate bullying. And then it's gone on from there, actually. Our website got taken off the internet as a result of a takedown notice from Facebook. They came back to us and told us that was an accident.
So many accidents. And also, for Cadwalader, a sort of heartbreak over the very existence of Facebook's oversight panel. The members, she says, are respectable scholars, yet they have signed on to an enterprise of limited scope, crisscrossed with red lines.
I really, really worry about institutional capture. I worry about tech money everywhere. You know, I worry about the fact they won't even reveal how much the people on the oversight board are being paid. I worry about the fact that one of the most preeminent First Amendment scholars in America, Robert Post, is being paid $200,000 a year to be one of its trustees. I worry about the fact that they got the head of the Human Rights School in Oxford University to be another of its trustees. You know, all across America, there are academics at universities who, if they don't depend upon tech money, they depend upon access to data or access to be able to research this stuff. So there is a whole industry which is supporting big tech. There was a very smart column the other day by Emily Bell on the oversight board. And she said, what would happen if everybody just withdrew their labor from the platforms? If all of these academics and journalists and NGOs just ignored them, put their tools down, all these fact-checking organizations, you know, they all lend legitimacy to the platforms. We, you know, become part of this industry.
It's a cliche at this point to call big social media the social experiment that it is, but still, the human trials continue and human institutions totter, all with Facebook's knowledge. In the aftermath of November's election, it seemed as if Facebook finally realized that its algorithm and the disinformation it feeds might be another accident waiting to happen, an experiment about to spin out of control. According to the New York Times' Kevin Roos, reliable news sources like The Times and NPR suddenly displaced incendiary nonsense in what momentarily relieved Facebook employees called nicer news feeds. Yeah, that didn't last long.
It's one person, like, literally flicking a switch, and then they flick the switch back on again. I mean, it's absurd when you think about it, but I think we, just because this has all happened so gradually, we are the frog which is being boiled. We just sort of accept this stuff. But along the way, it has almost destroyed, you know, a number of our democracies, yours being arguably still in the firing line there.
This is a reference to the 2016 presidential election in which Russian hackers and domestic political campaigns used Facebook behavioral data, some released by Facebook illegally, to sow division and suppress the African-American vote. As we enter what may become an era of antitrust struggle between the marbled-floored government offices and the Disneyland-esque campus at One Hacker Way, it helps to think about the adversaries, a few hundred lawyers and do-gooder watchdogs versus not a wayward monopoly, but a dangerous, willful, obscenely wealthy rogue state, age 16, population 2.7 billion, body count unknown. The so-called real Facebook Oversight Board and the rest of us are taking on real power. Yes, David slew Goliath, but that's just a story, isn't it? Coming up, the threat is worse than you think. This is On the Media.